Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Rylan. And on today's show, we're turning to the silver screen for a look at what's coming up at the cinemas and talking us through some titles to look out for is our film critic today, Karen Krizanovic. Karen, welcome as ever.
Always good to be here.
Indeed. Now, it's always good to have you. And look, I'd like to start things off with it's Mel Gibson's latest film. And we'll talk about Mel Gibson himself in just a moment. But first, let's hear a clip of Blood Father.
Missing link tattoo.
This is a collect call from
your daughter.
To accept the charges, say yes or press 1 now.
Yes.
Sorry, I did
yes.
not understand. Do you accept this call?
Yes. Can robot? Yes. Yes. Oh.
Dad.
Where you been, kid?
I left home a while ago.
Yeah, I know. You scared a lot of people.
I need cash fast.
Just enough so I can get lost because I'm
dead. I'm like this fly that's about to get splattered on a windshield.
Does that make any sense?
Karen, perhaps we should start off by talking about the film itself, though. Talk us through the plot.
You look at Blood Father and you think, okay, this is just basically Taken with Mel Gibson in it. Because Taken was such a fantastic template for Liam Neeson.
You've just name-dropped two rather B-grade things there, by the way.
What?
Taken and Taken. Mel Gibson.
Taken is a hit. Taken is a big,
yeah,
big hit.
In like a tacky sort of way, right?
I don't know. I think it's well-crafted. I think it does its job. It may not be fancy-smancy, but
fine.
It certainly is entertaining and people like it and it's satisfying. And it's
I'll
also
try not
the
to
vernacular.
Be a cinematic snob then, shall I? Well, in defense of Taken, we'll have to do that a little bit later. Tell us about Blood Father.
Okay, all right. Blood Father is the first Mel Gibson film since 2011's The Beaver, which was launched in Cannes. That's directed by Jodie Foster. And this is done by Jean-Francois Richet, who did Assault on Precinct 13. He's basically a policier director. But do you remember Marine Part 1 and 2?
No.
Well, that's right up your street. Those are really beautifully crafted French policiers, which are basically Taken, but they're French. So there, you like them. and he also Assault on Precinct 13, which is sort of his famous one. Now, this is a tremendous cast in Blood Father. You've got William H. Macy as, I'm getting ahead of myself, as the best friend to Link. Now, Link is Mel Gibson. He is a washed-up alcoholic. He's doing ink out of his trailer. And his daughter shows up being pursued by a drug cartel, drug lords, basically. And so he has got to defend her. So in a way, it's kind of Taken, but the daughter comes back rather than going away. And it's it sounds
quite a different.
It is quite different, but the nature of it is very, very similar. It's got some wonderful lines in it, sort of like, "I'm sorry, I made mistakes and you suffered." And so the interesting thing about this is that people are
saying
that's
one for the IMDb.
This is Mel Gibson apologizing to us by saying, you know, I'm this person that needs redemption, you know, basically. But
do you think is that what we're seeing here, Mel Gibson? Is making a proper movie again, which is interesting in itself.
It's a B-movie. It is a B-movie, but it's a good B-movie. Let's put it that way. Now,
okay.
Hollywood across the world, I mean, you know, French cinema isn't doing much better, are always looking for something that's going to bring an audience in.
Mm.
So it may not be The Great Gatsby or Carol, but this is going to put bums on seats because Gibson is fantastic in this role. There's a reason why he's famous, and it's not because of his past so much. He still has the goods. He can still act. He can still be mesmeric on the screen. And it's worth watching.
It's interesting, these sorts of films that, as you say, it's a B-movie, but it's attracting maybe a kind of audience that is willing to pay the sorts of prices that you need to be willing to pay in order to go to the movies today. It reminds me a little bit of a film maybe like Sicario, I suppose, which is not an absolutely massive hit, but because it appeals to that particular kind of audience, they're willing to go to the multiplex, buy the giant oversized Cokes, the big popcorns, spend their £15 on just the snacks, and put a bum on a seat.
Mm-hmm. Well, Sicario was a superb vehicle, really. I mean, you can't really compare the two outside of the two have guns, I guess, in common. But don't forget there's a large swathe of moviegoers that enjoy things that like policiers enjoy these kind of shootout movies and these heist films. And this is actually a really good return for Mel Gibson.
Well, that is an interesting choice of words unto itself. Who would have thought we'd be flocking to the cinemas to see Mel Gibson ever again? But, well, good for him. That's Bloodfather. It's out now in cinemas in the US and across Europe as well. And now let's move along to one of the most talked about adaptations this year. That's the cinematic version of Paula Hawkins' best-selling novel, The Girl on the Train. First, we'll hear a little bit of a clip.
Your wife hit me on Friday night.
What are you talking about?
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. And then she got in your car.
No. She said you yelled at her.
No,
that
is not what happened. She was in the tunnel and she hit me.
I don't want to argue in the street. In the middle of the day and you're drunk.
Look, I'm not drunk, Tom.
My wife is scared of you.
Of what?
I don't even know if that's a joke or not. Let's start with child abduction.
That's not how it happened.
You and I both know what you're capable of.
Karen, I've seen the poster for this. No, let me just say, look, posters are an important part of
they
a film's
are.
Marketing strategy. The poster for this movie is so dull.
Yeah.
The movie is called The Girl on the Train, and the poster is a girl sitting on a train.
Mm-hmm.
And I have nothing more to say.
Where's the rest of the information?
Exactly. I mean, it's. No. Tell me that the film fares a little better than that.
Not really.
Oh,
No. Okay, we were all really excited because, of course, Paula Hawkins wrote this fantastic book in 2015, The Girl on the Train, which is, you know, unreliable narration, suspicious characters, you know, really emotional, horrible, confronting things like not being happy. It was confronting basically female nightmares, you know, drinking too much, people thinking you're weird, you know, seeing that your best life is in your rearview mirror and not being able to have children and losing your part. You know,
it's a female nightmare. I have those every night.
I'm sure you don't worry about your fertility. Let's hope you don't.
Well, but generally, not yet.
Let's talk about that later. And it was, you know, three sort of suspicious female narrators. And we were thinking, how are they going to adapt this? Well, they have. And they've put the director, Taylor, who did The Help, which I liked, thought worked perfectly well. He's also an actor. Into this, it's a big budget film. You know, Emily Blunt is amazing in it, I have to say. But there's almost too much of her. And some of the editing is confusing. Some of the visuals are confusing. And if you haven't read the book, you are going to have a hard time following this film.
Just looking at the synopsis of the film, it is something that would definitely capture my interest immediately. I like those sorts of cold, distant, subtle thrillers. Mm. But you do need to have some degree of directorial restraint and flair in order to succeed at something like that. Someone like Ang Lee can do something like that perfectly. I'm thinking of films like The Ice Storm,
sure,
which just draws you right in, but it's such a simple,
spectacular
subtle plot.
Ice Storm is a fantastic film.
But this, I'm assuming that judging from your body language here in the studio today.
So slumping.
You're not entirely convinced on the selling of this plot via the directorial style here.
I disliked it more than other critics. I felt that it was very, very front-heavy. I got the characters confused. And also, Emily Blunt plays a woman who is basically drinking because she's in pain. But do we need a half an hour of that? I don't really think we do. And there's a lot of sort of blurry shots, and then there's a lot of close-up shots, and then there's a lot of, you know, oh, I was really longing for this. And I just thought it just carried on a little bit too much. The pace was quite leaden. I know at one point I nodded off. I'm sorry to admit that. It's kind of like I snorted and got myself awake.
You'll always get honesty from Karen.
I'm sorry about that. But it's if you like the book, you will like the film. But as a film, I think it really didn't deliver until the very, very last half an hour, really. That's when it started getting exciting. You suddenly understood what it was all about.
That's The Girl on the Train, which is out now in the UK and the US and will be released in the next few weeks around the world as well. Although perhaps you'd just like to read the book.
I'm sorry. My dad can get cranky sometimes.
As your father, I forbid you to marry.
He sure has a temper on him.
Hey! Stop talking to the customer and help Dad with his shorts!
Janet loves me. I love her!
You're making a big mistake.
Jody needs to go now.
I am the Greasy Strangler.
Let's move along now to our final film for today, which is The Greasy Strangler.
Yes.
That's a title and a half, isn't it? The plot for this seems quite bizarre, Karen. I won't attempt to explain it. That's what you're here for, to walk us through it.
Okay. Right. Okay. Alan Jones, who runs Fright Fest, or who originated Fright Fest, he is one of my touchstones. I always say to him, Alan, what have you seen? Because he sees stuff months and months ahead of I do. What have you seen that you like? And he goes, you must see The Greasy Strangler. I wasn't prepared to see this film. This is the weirdest film I have ever seen, bar none. One that was in a linear fashion. I mean, it's not like a really weird experimental film. It's just downright weird. And you love it, and you also really want to be sick. So it's not that bad. Okay, this is the setup. The cinematography is superb, really lovely. It's a weird story set in sort of fictitious L.A., where we've got Ronnie, who's an older guy, I think he's a 72-year-old actor called Michael St. Michaels. You know, with a name like that, he's going to have an interesting life.
Michael St. Michaels.
He runs a disco walking tour with his son, Braden, played by Sky Elabar. Now, this has been directed by the British director, Jim Hosking, who also did Renegades. And it is like John Waters run through the filter of, let's say, Tangerine. And has a British sensibility because there's a lot of, well, nudity. Okay, yes. And also pink turtlenecks, roll necks. And there's also a parallel plot with a grease-covered madman who goes and kills people.
When you say grease-covered, is he using the wrong moisturizer? Or
he's using too much moisturizer. He's literally covered in sort of chip fat.
I think we've all felt like that from time to time. I'm trying to work out exactly what the plot here is.
Okay. I will tell you what the plot is.
Okay.
The plot is that the son and the father living together uncomfortably. They do this disco tour and
They go inside discos.
Well, Ronnie was a mainstay in the disco era in the 70s. So he takes hapless people that should know better to sort of stupid, like a cafe that's closed and saying, you know, this is where Sly Stone was or something, you know, like that.
Like a very poor man's version of the Hollywood Homes tour.
Very much like that. And the son and the father, you know, they just go head to head, right? They argue all the time. Now, the son has fallen in love with a Latina who does a wonderful... This is Elizabeth Durazzo, who does a wonderful job playing a thankless role called Janet. A lot of nudity and bad wigs. So he falls in love with her. But of course, Ronnie is much more of a Lothario coming from the disco age, and he steals her away. So there's this
drama,
but they
ensues.
Still have to live together, and the Greasy Strangler, his murders escalate. Then they get closer and closer and closer to home. This is such a strange story, but it's basically of uncomfortable family relations and also a father who may be really, really old, but can still pull better than his son can.
Well, that's something for us all to aspire to. Karen Krasanovich, thank you so much for joining us today on the Monocle Arts Review. And that brings us to the end of today's program. My name's Ben Ryland, and my thanks to Fernando Augusto Pacheco, our producer today. Join us again at the same time on Monday. We'll be talking about art. But for now, from me, thanks for listening and goodbye.